Well, good morning, everyone. I guess I'm your post-election talk on boron, so we'll try to make it somewhat exciting after that election last night. But before I start, I would like to recognize my co-authors, also from the Mosaic Company. This is a unique opportunity for us. You know, we do quite a bit of research every year. We have a fairly robust research program. You know, some of you in this room have helped us with that task. So this really gives us a good opportunity to take those results and put them together and show some of what we have come up with. And over the last 5 years, any forward-looking statements, if you make any money, great. If you lose any money, not my fault. So if you make some, give some to me. That'd be great. But one of the focuses that we have really looked at has been boron in general, boron nutrition. You know, if we go back in the literature and we look at what has been published on boron, there's not a lot. You know, we go off concepts that have really been around in the last 60, 70 years, but haven't been revisited in quite some time. So as we look at boron, you know, what do we know? And, you know, from a leaching standpoint, we do know that boron will leach in the soil. It does move by mass flow. It is mobile. So that is a positive in terms of at least getting that nutrient to the plant. We know that it will move. But in terms of, you know, when we look at how much boron can be applied to the soil, we know that there's a very narrow range of toxicity and sufficiency. You know, I'm guessing if we look at most of our state recommendations, most of those recommendations for boron are going to look pretty similar, probably somewhere around 1 to 2 pounds, all broadcast, never banded, never in the seed row. So when we think about that, even though it's a mobile nutrient, 1 to 2 pounds, and when we look at what that crop utilizes, there's not a lot of coverage in the soil. And I'll go through some of these issues that we are seeing with boron, especially as we look across the United States. It is critical. Cellular growth, most of the cell wall is comprised of boron. That's where most of that boron does reside. So anytime that we have active cell growth, that's when we utilize boron. So now as we look at how a corn crop takes up boron, this is work that Ross Bender and Fred Bilo did, we see that there's really two active time periods in corn. We see first in the vegetative stage and then also again during the reproductive phase, starting with pollination. So about 60% is taken up before that grain filling period. So as we look at how boron is applied, you've got really two options. You can put it on the soil, and you can put it on a foliar. And when we look at those foliar applications, while they could be beneficial, we still have a large boron demand early season that we need to be meeting. So again, it's something that we can't ignore. We have to remember that we have to manage boron throughout the entire life cycle of that corn crop. Very, very important. And when we talk about high population corn, we see some differences, especially in root structure. You know, you imagine if we're going from a normal population up to a fairly high population, those root systems become somewhat suppressed because we have so much competition in that rooting zone. So again, we have less exploration, we have more plants. We really need to make sure that we are getting as much of that nutrient into the crop as absolutely possible. So like I said before, we have two options. We can start with the soil. We can also do a foliar application. You may think, well, we've probably got plenty of boron. You know, wherever I live, we've got organic matter, we've got good soils. We have some leaching, but it's not an issue. Well, we went and we've looked at some of the soil test results from some of the larger labs throughout the Midwest. And what's really been interesting is if you look at up till about 2011, the percentage of low or very low testing soils has really been increasing. Now, we've hit a plateau since about 2011, but if we look at the amount of soils that have gone through this lab and we look at how many are testing in that deficient category, more than 70% are. So from a soil standpoint, we know that maybe we don't have as much boron as we think we have. So again, something that we have to try and manage for. And I should mention, too, the critical value here was 0.5. Again, as we look across the Midwest, the eastern half of the U.S., you know, those values may change slightly. But it does give us a good representation of what is the boron status of our soils. So I'm going to talk just a little bit about the delivery mechanism by which we are using. So Aspire, or Mosaic has introduced a new product called Aspire. It is a potash product with boron added to it. So in terms of, as we look at the structure of the boron that's added, it's very similar to regular borax. So all we've done is tried to change the delivery mechanism by which we are adding this to the soil. It's a 0.5% boron product. What's interesting, because we have a 0.5% boron product, if we compare that, say, to a normal 14-3 granular boron product, you can see with the two products here, you get much more distribution in the soil. So when you're trying to meet those demands, when you're trying to apply those critical 1 to 2 pound rates, you can see that when you just use a straight boron product, you're not going to get nearly the coverage that you would with a lower analysis product such as Aspire. So it's very interesting as you look at the distribution concepts. And again, we talked about that narrow range between toxicity and deficiency. So again, we have to look at, if we are applying a higher concentration product, do we have the potential for developing hot spots in those fields? So we've done work with the University of Adelaide and trying to, again, go back and not look at it from a product concept. We're trying to look at it from a boron concept. We're trying to better understand how boron reacts in the soil and how those crops also interact with it. So what we did was we took just some trays and we put Aspire on the left and we put one granule of a granular boron product on the right. And the boron rate is exactly the same left and right. And we came back after 7 days and we looked at what was the soil concentration from those applications. And you can see with the Aspire, we had increased those boron concentrations pretty well. With the Granubor, we went up significantly. But as we look at in and around that cell, we hadn't had much diffusion. They were open to each other, so we were able to have movement between those cells. And even after 62 days, we can see that we still had a hot spot there with the granular boron product. It had started to diffuse out, but again, we're talking 62 days. Most boron application is going to be in the spring, so again, even 2 months after application, still not getting as much movement from that granule as we had hoped. So looking at it from a distribution standpoint, we thought, boy, if we go with a lower analysis product, we keep our boron levels in that adequate or sufficient level, but again, we don't develop those hot spots. So that brings me to the objective of this project. We really wanted to investigate the effects of boron on corn grain yield under intensive management, both in a higher corn population study and also with varying corn populations. And I'll go through the differences of these two projects and how really the one kind of fed from the other project. But going forward, I will refer to those as HYM, which is a fixed population, and POK, which is a varying population. So materials and methods. The high yield management study was conducted from 2011 to 2015. The POK started in 2014 and is currently going. The researchers, we've used both university and third party independent contractors. Now, when it came to high yield management, because we were trying to cover such a large area, we wanted to say to each of our researchers, we know you're going to have different growing conditions, but here are the parameters that we would like you to follow for your geography for producing a high-yield crop. So again, trait stack technology, we didn't specify any type of a hybrid maturity length on that because it's going to vary so much. But we did want to see that stack technology there. Population for the HYM, again, we set it more for a high yield, but again, gave them some bit of fluctuation of where a range of which they could work in, just depending on their specific area. And then we had anywhere from 64,000 to 109,000 plants per hectare in the POK project. Fungicide, strobilurin applied to pollination. MOP rate, 84 kilograms per hectare. And our nitrogen rate was 270 kilograms per hectare applied split application, 60% up front, 40% top dress. Experimental design for everything was randomized complete block, and then we analyzed everything using proc mixed and also contrasts. So from a location standpoint, you can see here with the green bars with the HYM, we had many more sites and much more coverage. POK has been a fairly recent addition to this, but fairly good coverage across the Midwest to really try and better understand this topic. And again, every year now with the POK especially continuing, we continue to add more locations. So with the HYM, as we look at our results, When we averaged everything across all locations, we had a fairly good response to boron over standard MOP. We had about a 3.7% yield increase just to the boron alone. And again, we aren't using with a spire. It's no different than a standard granular boron product. All we are doing is changing that delivery mechanism by which we're using within that. Now, it's interesting, as we look at these results, we've got to remember, this goes from 2011 to 2015. Was any one of those years similar? You know, you think about it, we had a lot of different conditions happening in there. And what's interesting, too, and I didn't show the data, but we saw a significant increase in each one of those years, including 2012. So it really just goes to show that stresses come in all types of situations. High yield management can exhibit a stress. Drought can exhibit a stress. So it really goes back to show us that boron is important when we have those stressful types of situations. Now, from an industry perspective, again, sometimes the stats don't always tell us everything we need to look at. Sometimes we just have to look at the data and see what it actually tells us. So when we just plotted everything and when we looked at the response of boron over standard MOP across all of our 43 locations, we had a response at 31, or a positive response at 31 of those locations. So about a 70% win rate, which is pretty good. As we looked at each of those 31 locations, we had about 60% of those that were actually statistically significant. So again, that really got us into thinking that, okay, there's something going on here with this high yield management. What happens if we change those populations? So hence brought about this POK experiment. You know, as we look at our main factors, again, treatment, we had an increase. Population, we had a good increase, all statistically significant. Now, what was interesting when we looked at the interaction itself, it was not significant. But again, we wanted to delve into this a little bit more, go in and see, all right, what is actually happening here with the treatment responses at each of these populations? And as we can see, as we increase that population, our magnitude of response also increased. And especially once we got up to that 109,000 population rate, we did see a substantial increase by using boron within those individual studies. So it really just, you know, helped to reinforce some of this information that we had been seeing from a high yield management perspective. So from a conclusion, again, when we look at Aspire or MOP with a granular boron product, it did show a yield advantage over the MOP in the HYM study, had a 70% win rate. Within the POK, we did see an increase in boron response with increasing population. Now, in terms of where do we go from here, again, this is just a snippet of what we've seen, but with the large database that we've been able to amass, we can now go back, look at site-specific, soil-specific. We can look at different soil properties and maybe have a better idea as to what sites will better have a response to boron. So, and that's very critical as we move forward in this step to really, again, try and better understand boron's role in the world of crop production. So it's really, you know, we're here, we make fertilizer, but again, we're really taking a step back and trying to understand just the science behind boron itself. So with that, I thank you all for your time, and I'll be happy to take any questions.
I've got two questions. When was the potassium and Aspire applied to the plots? And did you have a reason why you didn't put a blended boron material in with the potassium product as a comparison?
Sure. Yeah, so two questions there. First was, when did we apply the Aspire? That was all applied pre-plant. So within 1 to 2 weeks of planting is when we went out with that. Why didn't we include a traditional granular boron product? Again, with Aspire, because the chemical formulation is no different than standard borax, we just utilized Aspire as our boron response within there. So again, all we did was change the delivery mechanism with that.
Away, we may have time for you.
Okay.
Stay up here.
Thanks.
Is Dr. Lee here, our second speaker? Then we've got plenty of time for you, Matt. We can take some more questions if there are any.
I was just curious how you know, you showed that one graph where you had the spike of the concentrated product, and you had the little 62 days later, a little bit of diffusion out. What were those distances?
Oh, boy. Rodrigo, do you remember what the distances were in those individual cells from the boron experiment?
The cell was 5 centimeters.
Okay.
So about 4 inches away. Oh.
Yeah, so sorry, the original, the question was how big were the cells in that boron diffusion or boron movement study that we had had?
Did you see root proliferation around that zone of boron, the concentrated?
No, actually, when we, oh, yeah, sorry. Did we see root zone proliferation within those cells? No, actually, with the granular boron, we actually saw toxic conditions within there. So as it diffused out, yes. As that concentration went down, we did. But in and around that granule, yeah. Right.
So Matt, how did you hold the moisture in those cells? We're talking about boron's mobility. How did you manage the water content?
Yeah, so they were just incubated, and we kept them at a constant moisture. Again, it was really just trying to look at that natural movement away from the granule, so we didn't induce any outside factors within that. But, again, it really just gave an interesting concept as to how does that boron move away from the granule. All right, I think we're done. Oh. Yeah, so the question was, what about other crops? Yes, we have looked at alfalfa. We've looked at it both from a standard management system and a high-yield management system. So standard, we put it around 5 tons, and high-yield, we're somewhere above 7 tons. And we're pretty consistently about a half-ton increase with using Aspire. And again, we're not really introducing many other factors within that. It's really just looking at the difference of standard MOP versus Aspire. But it's been pretty consistent. But again, when we introduce higher yield management for that, again, we tend to see those higher responses come through. So, you know, we've looked at canola. You know, one of the interesting things, too, we work with Dr. Ishmael Chakmak out of Sabanchi University, who's a plant physiologist, and we've been looking at really, how does boron respond early on? And it's been interesting how, when we look at that root development, that's really what has been critical with boron, and really trying to get that root to really start to grow and to really expand, and that's where boron has been absolutely critical. Wayne.
Matt, could you speculate on what this might be or might do under much lower organic matter with beds and things. So I'm assuming you're incorporating your Aspire product.
Yeah. Right. So the question was on cotton. We have worked with that. What we have seen with cotton has been, you know, where, especially where you have the multiple foliar boron applications in cotton, the one shot of boron or of Aspire or potentially even another side dress application has been able to replace those foliar applications. And in some cases, you know, we see 100-150 pound increase in that cotton. But where we've seen it really been beneficial is in those reduced applications across the field.
Because our guys, you know, they'll stick the boron in with anything.
Right, right. And that's another thing we have been looking at has been, from a foliar aspect, how much of that's truly getting into the plant. Because when it comes to boron, we're talking about ounces. But again, repeated applications, how does that affect it? So still working on that question. So, Merle, you had another one?
Yeah, I was just curious about the most of that Midwest. Has there been any studies in semi-arid, like Colorado?
Yeah, good question. Yeah, so the question was if we've done it in any other location, semi-arid. We have. One of the issues that we run into, because, you know, while it is a boron product, it's also a potassium product. So when you get into those locations, the K levels really do start to increase. We have been working in Western Canada, and we have seen benefits with boron, but we do have to manage the salt, too, in that perspective. So it's been more challenging.
Thank you.